It's time to dive into the latest news and updates from the Vegas Golden Knights. This is Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
What were you expecting today? Was it, let's look ahead to the Western Conference Final with the Vegas Golden Knights rolling into the third round of the Stanley Cup playoffs? Or were you nervous about the Vancouver Canucks facing elimination for the first time in the playoffs? And the hero potential with Thatcher Demko and their goaltender who started his first ever Stanley Cup playoff game last night. If you were leaning towards the latter, you are going to experience a game number six, and you can pat yourself on the back because that little predator lying in wait was the Vancouver Canucks as they took every punch that the Vegas Golden Knights could give and offer up through all three periods of play last night. And Vancouver outscores Vegas in the third frame and walk off with a 2-1 victory. A lot to get to today on Nighttime at Noon as we will dive into what happened in that game number five. Disappointment on the result, but how far do you go in trying to tweak things if you're the Golden Knights and Pete DeBoer? Also, a trade to tell you about in the National Hockey League. It's kind of weird. Seven teams still involved in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but we do have significant action and transactions taking place with the other clubs. Montreal and St. Louis hooking up, trading a netminder of one that you will know of. We'll get into that in just a little bit. And a coach has been hired. Todd Reirden, formerly of the Washington Capitals, was not on the outside looking in for very long as he hooks up with the Pittsburgh Penguins. We'll dive into that if we get a chance. Not saying that we'll get to that part of it because there's so much to digest with what happened in Game 5 last night. The Golden Knights were the better team. And let's be... flat out honest, if we can. Just you and I. And let's chat about it for a couple of seconds. You had Thatcher Demko, who had played 8 minutes in the Stanley Cup playoffs inside the bubble. He is the backup, the heir apparent to Jacob Markstrom, and he will be the guy next year if Markstrom doesn't re-sign long-term with the Vancouver Canucks. He has pedigree, second-round draft choice. He's come up through the ranks, and they leaned on him, played a career-high games this year, but he'd never started a Stanley Cup playoff game and had less than half a period experience in goal in the bubble. So it was there. It was just on a platter. And the Golden Knights came out and did exactly what they wanted to do, exactly what was part of the game plan, firing 16 shots on Thatcher Demko. One got through him, and I'll give the goaltender credit because he not only battled and got himself involved in the game, but found confidence as it wore on. And it was one of those nights where you can play a near-perfect game and still lose, and it's unique in hockey because a goaltender has that much influence on the game, both being really, really good, like Thatcher Demko was, almost perfect, and or really, really suspect. And we've seen that on occasion through the course of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Saw it the night before when Ben Bishop was inserted for the Dallas Stars, and he got lit up in the first period against the Colorado Avalanche. So it can go either way, and last night was a career night for Thatcher Demko. Do I think that there's sustainability there, repeatability on Thatcher Demko? That's a lot to ask from a guy that's been hanging around. That's a lot to ask from Jacob Markstrom, who is the workhorse for the Vancouver Canucks. So are you disappointed if you're a Golden Knights fan? Yeah, because you wanted to punch your ticket to the Western Conference Final. Be that first team from the West to advance to the Final Four. Make history by getting back to the Western Conference Final for the second time in 3 years. It's okay to be disappointed. But it's also okay to be positive about what you saw from the Golden Knights and putting that offensive pressure on the Vancouver Canucks. There wasn't Jonathan Marchessault was getting some heat for the penalties, but they did a good job staying out of the box. They did a good job of putting pressure on Quinn Hughes and company and forcing turnovers. They did a really good job getting pucks to the net, and there were rebounds available. They just didn't get to those, and maybe that's where the tweaks will happen. Maybe it's that extra ounce of effort, and I do believe if you are going to sneak into that bubble, which I don't suggest anybody do, you can get into big trouble. It's not good. But if you're going to sneak into that bubble and you're going to have a conversation, just a one-on-one with a couple of members of the Golden Knights, I think what you'd find today is that they're pissed off. They played a good game. They did what they wanted to do, and they didn't get the result out of it. And now they have to go back and play again tomorrow. And I think that's where they're ticked off, is they could have bought themselves some time. I don't have one ounce of thought that they're upset with the way they played. I just think that they're ticked off with the result. The coach did his thing. I thought Pete DeBoer changing up the lines in the third period was a brilliant idea. The easiest thing to do when you're piling up pressure on the Vancouver Canucks the way they did through two periods would be to keep it the same. The fear that I would have if I was standing behind the bench would be frustration. And a way to avoid that frustration is just tweak your lines a little bit. Show the players that that you're trying as hard as they are to get something going. And I don't think it meant any extra assault on Thatcher Demko by any means. I don't think it made for more chances than they had before. But I think it made sure that everybody remained engaged, and it was that case until the very end. A little different type of game than the Chicago game that last night's being compared to so much. Game 4 against Chicago, where they just blistered the Blackhawks with all those opportunities. There's a little more pushback in the third period by the Vancouver Canucks. But all in all, I think you're going to see and hear that the Golden Knights are just more ticked off than anything. Happy, satisfied, content with their effort, but just ticked off, maybe put out, that they have to play another game against Vancouver. Because this series should be over. Should be done. But now you have a game 6, and there's all kinds of intriguing dilemmas here. Most of it revolves around both goaltenders. This is Nighttime at Noon. Darren Millard in the CNA studio here at VGK headquarters, along with Dan Duva, who called that game last night. And Dan, when you sit down and you evaluate what happened last night, I know that the sense is, and what we all want to do is go, can you believe they lost? But that's hard to say when you look at the performance by the team last night.
It, to me, Darren, comes down to the Knights giving up a goal 24 seconds after they had scored a goal. The Knights were controlling the game. They hadn't scored yet. You figure you want to run the score up on Thatcher Demko, as you outlined all the time between starts for Demko. But at the same time, you know, they had kept the Canucks off the board for shots for more than 12 minutes in the second period. Vegas then, you know, had a power play chance there in the second period. They didn't score on it, but shortly thereafter, Shea Theodore gets the impressive finish for the goal. And that unit that was on the ice for the goal stayed on the ice for the ensuing shift. And it wasn't immediately from the draw. The Canucks got the puck in, let her help get the puck out. But the Knights, for whatever reason, couldn't continue the play into the offensive zone. And boom, in comes Miller, feeds Besser. And next thing you know, it's a tie game. And that was the turning point. I just spoke with Pete DeBoer just a little while ago here. And he didn't use the words missed opportunity. But he did talk about that as a turning point. It could have been the start of the end for the Canucks if Vegas gets that goal and then continues what it had been doing the entire second period, which was not allowing any shots. But when Vancouver gets that goal, not only does it erase the momentum Vegas had built the entire second period, not just the goal, everything they had done in the second period, boom, gone in a poof with that equalizer from Besser on the setup from Miller. And I think that's, to me, the turning point of the game. Vegas has plenty of chances to go back ahead 2-1. They didn't. And that's where you kind of think, gee, how did they not score more than one goal against Thatcher Demko? It's a Vancouver club that the Knights, not only in the regular season, but for long stretches here in the playoffs, Knights have dominated the Canucks. You know, Jacob Markstrom's a terrific goalie, but he's not been terrific against Vegas. Goals against average, regular season playoffs combined, is well over 4. Yet Thatcher Demko comes in and holds Vegas to one goal. Demko had played against Vegas last season in relief of Markstrom because the Knights beat up on Markstrom, and Demko made 16 saves on 17 shots in relief, a game that Vegas won. But that's it. You know, so to me, it was Riley Smith telling us in the second intermission that there are rebounds to be had, rebounds available. We're not getting to them.
Which was true. There was pucks available.
Yeah, and the Knights failed to capitalize on those rebound chances. So those are the things that come to mind.
And those rebounds that are available, I think that's where being upset, ticked off, sour that you didn't eliminate Vancouver last night comes into play. And that's where I think the extra motivation comes, or execution, or being able to get the pucks comes from. It fuels you to get to those loose pucks in that situation tomorrow night in a game 6.
Right, and there's got to be the urgency. There were, in the third period, in the first handful of shifts, I didn't see the urgency that we'd previously seen in third periods. That's been...
Or was Vancouver just a little more confident because they replied so fast,
right? I'm sure that they were, but there were moments in all three zones that it seemed that the Knights were a step late to the puck, or there wasn't the urgency, because they have been so good in third periods. You know, they had, going into the game, outscored opponents 17-5 in the third period, and it did not look like the team that had come out guns a-blazing in the previous third period, in which they scored 3 goals on Sunday in Game 4. There were a couple of plays, a play in each zone, offensive, neutral, and defensive zone, that Gary and I talked about on the radio that didn't lead directly to anything, but you're thinking, gee, you wouldn't have expected that, given how strong they have been in third periods. That's not where they lost the game, though. It was, you know, to me, it just they failed to have that shift after scoring the game's first goal late in the second period. They failed to maximize and build upon that momentum gained by finally breaking through.
Oh, you've heard from Dan Duva. You've heard from Darren Millard. Here is Coach Pete DeBoer on the loss in game number 5 and regrouping for game 6.
Yeah, for sure. You know, especially when a goalie's playing like that. You know, having said that, we had some really good looks too, and he made some big saves too. I mean, you know, even without traffic, he had some point blank shots that, you know, we've got guys that can stick those in the net, and we just didn't tonight. So, you know, you can't overreact. There's not many quarterfinal series like this that, you know, or conference semifinal series that end in 5 games. It just doesn't happen. So you got 2 good teams going at it, and we got a chance to win this in 6, and we'll come back and regroup and get ready for that.
Thatcher Demko, when it was announced that he was going to get his first career playoff start, people were drooling. And you try to calm them that there is a reason why he was drafted in the second round. Top prospect. It's taken him a while to get there, but boy, did he deliver. That I can't think of many tougher positions for a goaltender to go into. Haven't played in 6 months. Team's facing elimination, and you do that.
He was fresh.
Yeah. Yes, you're right.
You know, I also mentioned this to Gary during the broadcast last night. You think about coaches and their loyalty to players who've delivered for them in the past. And while Thatcher Demko has 13 regular season wins this year for the Canucks, I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at a few years ago when Travis Green was the head coach of the Utica Comets, mm-hmm. and Thatcher Demko was his goalie. And he wasn't, you know, the sometimes starter, sometimes back. I mean, he played 40-some games. Like, he's playing a ton for the Utica Comets. And that's a league where you're playing every week, you're playing back-to-back. Sometimes you're playing 3 games in 3 days. And at that stage, Demko's shortly out of Boston College and had a terrific career for Jerry York and the BC Eagles, was teammates with Alex Tuck. But then when you're trying to break in the American League, you mentioned that he's a second-round pick, but he's coming from California. That's like, you know, California to Boston College, and now he's a Vancouver draft. So there's, it's like, who is this guy? And I think that when Travis Green has an opportunity to get to know a guy, what makes him tick, what makes him go, what can motivate him, while they spent time together in the American League, especially Demko's a rookie coming from college hockey into the pro ranks, I would suspect that Travis Green had a fair bit more confidence in Demko than those of us who just see a backup goalie who's never really had playoff hockey and was the backup to Markstrom. Now, Markstrom's been a terrific goaltender this year for the Canucks, but Vancouver was the last team to use somebody other than the regular goalie to start a game. So you're thinking, all right, well, there's got to be a reason for that. They must really think Markstrom's the guy and not Demko. But, you know, we know organizationally, you know, versus, you know, coaching staff, I bet you Travis Green is one of the least surprised people Demko did what he did.
Very different. Vancouver swimming uphill the entire time. Upstream, uphill. Not you don't really swim up a hill, though. I should make that point. But upstream, the entire time, they lost the first game against Minnesota, and they've kind of been battling and then upset the champions. And now in this one, just trying to stay alive. So is Vancouver now into a two-goalie situation like the Golden Knights? And where does Vegas go with back-to-back games in games 6 and 7? We'll get into that as we continue. But fans, eat like a Golden Knight as you watch your Golden Knights play. A limited number of to-go packs available at McKenzie River Pizza Grill and Pub for pre-order. Each playoff game, $50 gets you a large pizza, two salads, lodge poles, and 475 Brewing Company beers. This is what you do tomorrow night. You phone 702-916-2999 to order your to-go pack. It's awesome. Then you sit down and you watch Game 6 and hopefully a Golden Knight victory advancing to the Western Conference Final. We'll get into that goaltending front, and you'll hear from Pete DeBoer, who was gold today in his media availability, as we continue on Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
We're back to Nighttime at Noon on your home for the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Couple of pillars. Jared back in the studio at Lotus Broadcasting, and Garrett here at City National Arena, making sure that we get on the air. Nighttime at Noon, Darren Millard, Dan Duva with you to chat about what happened both in Game 5 and looking ahead to Game 6 of this second-round series. Vegas remains leading this set 3-2, going into another elimination possibility. They can bounce the Vancouver Canucks with a victory tomorrow night. Want to get to a little bit more audio. One clip from last night, Alec Martinez was asked about coming up short in Game 5, and this is his answer off a game in which the Golden Knights clearly controlled the pace.
Obviously, their goalie came up big. You know, I thought we did a decent job of generating some opportunities. I think there's some things that we need to tighten up, but it's playoff hockey. These are going to be close games, and unfortunately, we're on the wrong side of this one.
I will not go 7 minutes of each segment without letting Dan talk. So I want to get you involved with this little bit. Maybe you can jump off here. The composure of the Golden Knights in the games that they've lost, but clearly been the better club, has impressed me that they haven't strayed far from the game plan.
Yeah, there are three losses now in the postseason for the Knights. And I'd say that last night's game was somewhere in between loss number one and loss number two. In other words, loss number one, Knights played really, really well, and Corey Crawford was fantastic and prolonged the series for the Blackhawks in Game 4 facing the elimination. The second Vegas loss, which was earlier this series, Game 2 against Vancouver, the Knights were just not at their best. Now, which is not to say they have played other games this year that they've won this postseason. They've played other postseason games where they haven't been great, but still they just score a bunch of goals and they win. The game last night was a good chunk of Thatcher Demko. Not that Thatcher Demko was as good as Corey Crawford was. And there were also the glimmers of the Knights being a dominant team in control. But there was also, as I talked about before, there were a couple too many stretches where they did not keep their foot to the floor. There were mistakes that that weren't as egregious as, say, game two, where the Knights were just not up to snuff. So I find game three somewhere in the middle. But I think that, you know, just hear the comments from Alec Martinez there and from Pete DeBoer, and also listening to Riley Smith earlier today, and I think we'll get to hear from him in a few minutes. But it seems like they can go forward with a lot of the successes, the things that they did well from last night, rather than, oh, geez, the Canucks figured something out. Yeah. We've got to, you know, redraw the plan. We've got to scrap what we were doing and go about it a different way. I think that if they play tomorrow the way they did yesterday, they'd be very pleased.
So there's the challenge in my mind for the head coach, Pete DeBoer, is when your team plays so well in defeat, how do you get them ready for the next game? Because you don't want to change too much, or do you?
Right. And listen, they did adjust things during the game yesterday. Part of it precipitated by Zach Whitecloud didn't play the last 6 or 7 minutes of the first period after first getting sent head over heels by Gaudette, kind of weirdly crashing into the boards. Then he blocks a shot, so he's got to go to the room. That's why he missed the rest of the first period. Comes back for the second. Then there's that weird collision with Tyler Mott that, you know, sort of like a hip check, but, you know, there was
undercut
just,
him, yeah.
Yeah, undercut him. That's a good way to describe it. So he had sort of a difficult night. And therefore, you know, there were stretches where you probably only had five available defensemen. Meanwhile, as far as the forwards go, Pete DeBoer did change up the combinations. We saw Carlson go up with Smith and Marcia. So,
and I like that. Even though you're dominating the play, I like the idea of changing it up a little
Stevenson
bit.
Goes with Pacioretty and Stone. Wad drops down to the fourth line. You know, so you had Stastny then go with Tuck and Cousins. And those things are fine. And it can often be the cause of a jump start. It can throw the other team out of sync or off kilter. But is there, you know, there are things that you concede there. And I talked about this with Gary on the postgame show last night. Vegas scores the goal. Shea Theodore, terrific play. The same five skaters who were on the ice for the goal stayed on the ice for the ensuing shift. The defensemen in that case were Shea Theodore and not his regular partner Alec Martinez, but Braden McNabb. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Vancouver scored the goal because McNabb and Theodore don't play with each other very much. They made a good play. There were a couple of things that could have happened in the neutral zone so that the play never would have happened. But I was curious what, you know, okay, Vegas scores a goal. Oftentimes, you know, that shift right after a goal is critical. Vancouver changed. Vegas didn't. And not only did Vegas not change, they left out a group of players who are normally not together. And when you're trying to throw the other team off guard, again, that can be helpful. But I wonder, you know, I couldn't help but wonder if it were, say, Schmidt and McNabb or Martinez and Theodore, if perhaps it, you know, they might have defended that play a little bit differently. So, again, there are things that you can do during a game to spark your club, but that spark can also at times backfire because you might not click with guys that you're not normally playing with.
I have a pet peeve with coaches.
Oh, yeah?
When a player scores and they change up the lines all the time, I've never understood that. Why, when a unit scores, 95% of the time, maybe you disagree, they change the lines. And whether that's just because they're going by the bench, high-fiving, and they automatically come up, I don't know. But I kind of like the idea. Outside of you're right. It is a little odd that you keep a couple of defensemen out there. Was that the rotation because of Zach Whitecloud?
And I went back to watch, and he was back by then. Mm-hmm. You know, so
how's he feeling?
Right,
that
you know,
kind of thing.
Like you're not 100% sure. I mean, they're Holden and Whitecloud had their regular shift just before the goal. Previous defensive pair, Holden Whitecloud took their shift. Okay. So, in other words, I don't know. I did ask Pete about it today. He didn't really provide the fullest answer that I was hoping for. But, and again, we're kind of quibbling and maybe looking too closely at something that is not really an issue. But
I like that they left the unit on that finally broke through.
Yeah, there has been, when the Golden Knights have put on the fourth line after a goal, it just further decimates an opponent now on its heels.
Does Pete usually do that after a goal scored or a goal against? Goal against he does
well,
a lot.
It is not as much Pete DeBoer as it has been something that had started with Gerard Gallant that was for three games not continued by Pete DeBoer, but then after three games and ever since, Pete DeBoer has started the fourth line.
While we're talking about Zach Whitecloud, can you explain to me what happened behind the net when Holden Stick gets stuck through the blade and Vegas ends up being shorthanded out of the whole thing? And it was a holding the stick penalty on Roussel's stick got stuck in on
yeah,
Holden's
well,
arm.
When they're...
But that was one of the more all the injuries and the and Whitecloud getting beat up and the Vancouver Canucks winning the game 2-1. That was a little microcosm of just that it wasn't necessarily going to be Vegas's night when the stick ends up through the tuck blade and both defensemen are down in the corner looking up going, what just happened?
Right. Well, we know in game four, sticks go up into the air and one of them clipped a Vancouver stick. The referee thought it was Marchessault when in fact it was another Canuck. Crazy things happen with sticks back behind the goal. The officials might think that they see it clearly, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but they can get you in the face. They might get stuck in your teammate's stick. Lots of crazy things. There's not a lot of room back behind the goal. I know they made it the back of the goal a little bit, they changed the depth of the goal, so there's a little bit more room back there than there used to be. But it was a weird one. Crazy things go on back there.
Holden's trying to pull his stick out. Whitecloud's on his back. He can't go anywhere.
You don't know whose stick you're grabbing. You're stuck somehow, and you can't get up.
How about which goalie you're going to play? Who do you think Vancouver goes with for Game 6? And then we'll hear Pete DeBoer's answer to who he's considering starting in Game 6, because Game 6 and 7 will be played on back-to-back nights. Who do you anticipate starts for the Canucks?
I would say Demko starts Game 6, which leaves you with Markstrom, should he be healthy. You know, that's the big thing. Markstrom was not even the backup yesterday. If Markstrom just needed a day, I don't know. But, you know, is it if he's not good to go for Game 6, is he good for Game 7? You know, do you really want Thatcher Demko to play games 5, 6, and 7, 3 games in 4 days, having not started since March? I would think that you also don't want to use Markstrom for both games 6 and 7 because he just played back-to-back, and clearly he wasn't good to go for the first game after the back-to-back. In other words, Travis Green, should they get to game 7, you'd have to use both goalies, is my thinking. Therefore, you start Demko in game 6, leaving you a more rested, perhaps healthier Markstrom. Now, it could turn out that Markstrom is not good to go for either game, in which case it's an unfortunate, but then, as a result, easier decision for Travis Green because you just go with Demko. And similar thoughts on the Vegas side, other than they're not, as Pete DeBoer said today, not thinking about game 7. They're only thinking about game 6. Well, Travis Green can't quite think that way.
No.
Yeah, you got to win game 6 to get to game 7, but you know, it's a different mindset when you're the coach of the team ahead versus the coach of the team behind.
So we will hear from Pete DeBoer now on his philosophy on the goaltenders, which he's split up the goaltending duties in back-to-back scenarios in these playoffs. What will he do for games 6 and 7?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. I'm not even thinking about 7. You know, we'll think about 7 if we need to think about 7.
I'm going to think about games 6 and 7.
Yeah.
And we'll give you our thoughts as we continue. We'll get really deep into the goaltending side of things on the nighttime at noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Golden Knight fans, you want to show your spirit no matter where you are in Nevada. This is the Golden Knights license plate. It is awesome. A VGK plate is a great way to night up your vehicle and show everyone on the road what team you root for. Go to dmvnv.com/plates today and show your VGK pride. What do we think happens with the goaltending in game 6 tomorrow night? And how does that spill over to game 7? We'll go there. Pete doesn't want to, but we will go there. Plus, a trade involving the Montreal Canadiens and St. Louis Blues and a coaching hiring as we continue on Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Live from City National Arena, this is Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Vegas Golden Knights a win away from the Western Conference Final. The series, though, a little bit tighter, as it's 3-2 Golden Knights going into Game 6 tomorrow night. They will play Game 7, if necessary, on Friday. So it creates a back-to-back. Darren Millard, along with Dan Duke. First time we've ever actually worked together. We've done some streams together, but this is the first kind of full show that we've done together.
Is that right?
Yeah. I keep track of these things.
You got a list? You got a spreadsheet? Yes. I've got all my charts and notes, and yet I cannot find the one that has the Dan and Darren show together.
Yeah, there's an analyst, John Garrett, you know, the longtime Vancouver Canuck analyst. He's kept track of every play-by-play guy he's ever worked with.
Oh, wow.
And he's up to, like, 55 or something
Oh, wow.
Like, somebody's done just one game, but a lot.
You got to check out Kenny Albert's list. And Kenny's doing the Golden Knights Canuck series for NBCSN, and Kenny's fantastic. And, of course, the son of Marv Albert, the legendary broadcaster. But Kenny has this crazy list of partners, you know, analysts, color commentators he's worked with. Because for Kenny, it's not just hockey. And he's done the Rangers on the radio for a long time, done hockey nationally. You know, he's done basketball, baseball, football.
Right.
You know, he's done everything. So his list of partners is, like, approaching 200. It's outrageous. He keeps track. Like his archives are crazier than mine, by the way. He's got VHS tapes going back decades in his basement.
Kenny's October, traditionally, is off the charts because he's doing all the different sports from day to day. Now he's in the bubble.
Right, and remember a couple years ago, you had the Rangers, Lightning, in the Eastern Conference Final. He was doing those games on the radio for New York, and doing the Western Conference Final for NBC, which was Chicago and Los Angeles. So he was doing every game of both series, flying from New York to L.A., L.A. to Tampa, Tampa to Chicago, Chicago to New York, and on.
Kenny should share a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you that as a play-by-play guy, I drool over that kind of opportunity. That sounds amazing. I mean, it might, you know, deprive you of sleep, but still, that's what we live for.
We will have all day tomorrow to dissect or predict, I guess is a better way to put it, what the Golden Knights and the Vancouver Canucks will do with their goaltending. And it's a real theme right now in the Stanley Cup playoffs. This Dallas-Colorado scenario is also kind of up in the air with all the shuffling that's going on. But we heard Pete DeBoer say he's not even thinking about Game 7. Pete has also, in the bubble, split up his goaltenders for back-to-back games. So if you don't think about Game 7, that tells me Robin Lehner starts Game 6 tomorrow night. But if you're thinking about Game 7 and you're going to split them up, does that mean Marc-Andre Fleury starts Game 6? Because it's a tough position to put him in for Game 7. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
I feel like I've got three coconuts, half shells up here, and I'm moving them around.
Right. Well, listen, there are two conflicting statements that Pete DeBoer has gone back to, and it's no disrespect. He's the coach. He can say what he wants to say, but they are contradictory statements. He says, on one hand, that's not just Pete, it's any coach. Yeah. On one hand, we have a plan. Now, he's not telling us what it is, but we have a plan on how we're going to deploy the goaltenders.
And I believe that.
Yeah. But then number two, he says, I'm not thinking about Game 7. Well, those are directly contradictory statements. If you have a plan, but you're not thinking about Game 7, then how can your plan be, you know, that just doesn't click. But again, I'm not saying that he is in reality conflicted. He doesn't want to show his cards publicly, which, of course, you respect. He doesn't want the opposing team to have any advantage, and also reserves his right to make a change to his plan or his decision. But I'm with you. If you're thinking only about the next game, Robin Lehner has clearly become the guy, so he would be the guy to start Game 6. But then if you're looking at Games 6 and 7, specifically because it's back-to-back. If we're not back-to-back, it's a different conversation.
This is really, the back-to-backs complicates things.
But the only previous back-to-backs this postseason, Pete DeBoer has, apparently, according to plan, used both goalies.
In different scenarios, though.
Right. First time around, Fleury got the Saturday game, won. Lehner got the Sunday game and lost. Then the next time, they switched it. Lehner went first, then Fleury. So you're looking at the possibility of Lehner Game 6, Fleury Game 7. But if you're going to go from that standpoint, you know, clearly Lehner has become the guy. Do you want somebody other than your guy starting a Game 7? No, but at the same time, Marc-Andre Fleury has the sixth most wins in NHL playoff history, fifth most games. So, but then do you flip it around? Well, maybe you want Leonard to go in a winner-take-all Game 7, Fleury in Game 6, or do you just go with your guy in both games?
You're making me sound like I know what I'm talking about.
Well, you're the goalie guy, so than I am.
There's also another scenario at play. Do you, and this is all complicated if you lose Game 6, which based on,
oh boy,
they haven't lost back-to-back games in 7 months. Do you start Leonard in Game 6 and 7? And if you need to give him a rest because you've got the two goaltenders, do you start Fleury in Game 1 of the Western Conference Final? There's also that at play.
Right. You know, you go into the start of the next round and you'd have a much fresher Marc-Andre Fleury. Sure, that's possible, but, you know, you have to win this round first. And it's an interesting conundrum. The drawback would be Robin Leonard. We have often lauded Marc-Andre Fleury for being in fantastic physical shape. We cannot say the same thing about Robin Leonard. They're different kinds of goaltenders. Fleury is athletic, acrobatic, terrific physical shape. I mean, he's older than I am, yet he looks 10 years younger than me, you know? Meanwhile, Robin Leonard, because he's a bigger guy, I mean, he's 6'4", but I don't know what his actual weight is,
he can play on consecutive nights.
Well, but what I'm saying is, I'm not sure that in this position, like, do you want, I'm not saying he can't, but it's not just any old back-to-back. It's Game 6 and Game 7
right.
of a playoff series. And, you know, is that what you want to do? If he can play back-to-back, why has he not played back-to-back earlier?
Because you have the luxury
season?
Of two goaltenders.
Right. And so here we are again, though, where you've got – and it's not just any other starting goalie. It's Marc-Andre Fleury.
Right.
And aside from what he's done for the Golden Knights, there's a sentimental attachment here. There's no denying that for the fans in Vegas. But he's still fantastic. And he was fine the other day in the win that he got. Having not played in 15 days, but the previous Saturday, he was terrific. You know, he had a bad stretch in his second game, which was the Golden Knights' second round-robin game. That was his bad performance, gave up the two goals in 21 seconds, did not look good. Other than that, we've seen some pretty good Marc-Andre Fleury. So all of this to sum it up, I don't know, Darren.
And I'm with you, but you know.
It's two things. I don't know what I would do, and I don't know what Pete DeBoer will decide to do. It's two different things, because Pete DeBoer might decide to do something, and I might disagree with it. I don't know what I think they should do, and I don't know what Pete DeBoer is going to do. I don't know either one.
And normally, we have a clear opinion ourselves what we would do.
Yeah. And then we'll see if the coach agrees with us.
Yeah. But that's how complicated this is with the potential of back-to-back games.
So do you feel that you have an opinion? Like if you were the coach, where would you go with this?
I would go Leonard in 6 and roll him back out there in 7.
So what you laid out a moment ago is what you'd go with.
And if there was a fatigue factor, I go Fleury to start
the conference final.
Just because it's clearly that Leonard's your guy.
And that very well could play out. Or they could just win Game 6 and this won't be a discussion.
Let me phrase it another way. If Markstrom is healthy, which coach has the tougher decision on who to start? Oof.
Yeah, I'd say that probably Pete DeBoer, because at least Travis Green has the excuse in his back pocket of Markstrom not being healthy.
And facing elimination.
Right. And maybe Markstrom's at 90%, you know, he thinks he can play, but you know, he didn't even dress for the game last night. So at least Travis Green
cheered very well.
Yeah, they showed plenty of camera shots of him in one of the suites cheering on his teammates and looked really into it, really as if he were any other fan. So I would say that it's probably Pete DeBoer because – you know, we already mentioned the sentimentality. I don't think that really concerns Pete DeBoer, to be honest with you. As our colleague Garrett Callaway points out, imagine if the Golden Knights season ends with three consecutive Robin Leonard losses. And that, you know, if you were to start Game 6 and 7 with Leonard and they don't advance, you know, now all of a sudden you're the guy that Pete DeBoer chose – you know, who has been terrific, then finds himself three consecutive losses and the Knights season ends. That would be hard to swallow.
Not only can I not believe it's not butter, but I can't believe you guys even went there. And how much money does Garrett Callaway pay you per name drop?
Well, he's very helpful behind the scenes. If not for Garrett, we could not get our radio broadcast on the air. So,
but all this these free mentions of his name is just
oh, who said they were free?
Oh, okay, good. Bill and Carol Foley created the Foley Food and Wine Society to celebrate. They're paying up right now to celebrate three of the greatest passions, world-class wines, exceptional cuisine, and outstanding travel destinations. As a member of the society, you will have access to an entire portfolio of properties around the globe. The Foley Food and Wine Society offers an exclusive opportunity to join like-minded individuals who seek to experience the finer things in life. Join for free today by visiting FoleyFoodandWineSociety.com. Jared, back at the Lotus Studios. Garrett Callaway, making sure that we're up on the air here at City National Arena. This is Nighttime at Noon with Darren Millard and Dan Duva on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
We're back to Nighttime at Noon on your home for the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Final segment of this Wednesday. On Nighttime at Noon, Darren Millard, Dan Duva, the combination that you've been asking for, that you've been clamoring for, that you've been tweeting about, and it's finally here. Duva,
lots of tweets here. Yeah, holy Toledo.
It's you know what? This, I feel bad for everybody else on our staff because we may end up taking over the entire show.
Right. Well, especially if we keep talking about Taylor Ham.
Yes, which you did yesterday on the Insider Show. And I didn't have the foggiest clue what you were talking about, but it was an education.
Now you do.
Yes. That there's the Taylor Ham, and then there's, like, whatever else there is.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even name you another producer of pork roll. Next time we're in Jersey, we'll get you a good breakfast sandwich with Taylor Ham.
Well, there's a trade today in the National Hockey League, and there's some draft picks involved, but Jake Allen goes from the St. Louis Blues, the reigning Stanley Cup champion, St. Louis Blues, still there. They have not been dethroned yet, but he goes to the Montreal Canadiens. What do you make of this trade? Because there's some intrigue to it, some fascination to why Montreal would do that. I've got an answer, but I'm curious.
I'm also interested on the St. Louis end of it. Obviously, Jordan Binnington emerging a couple years ago as the guy, but in the postseason this year, you know, just couldn't figure it out. And to the extent that he was pulled, and Jake Allen became the more reliable goalie. Now, Allen was very helpful in the run to the Cup final a year ago, but it was very much in support of Binnington. David Alexander is the goalie coach with the Blues, and I know David very well because we worked in the American League together. And David, out of New Brunswick, has a goalie camp, had been goalie coach at University of Maine, and several of the guys that he has worked with in previous years in off-season roles, he's now found a way to connect with at the NHL level. So and David continued after the coaching change, so he was there through it all. And
Jake Allen is from Fredericton, New Brunswick.
Right, and that's why I mentioned the connection there. So David knows Jake Allen. And so that's why I was a little bit surprised. Not that the goalie coach is making the decisions on those things necessarily, but I guess the Blues believe in Binnington. And what's your take on it from Montreal side?
Blues do save $4 million in cap space at a time when they're trying to sign Alex Pietrangelo. So there's method to the madness there. Mm-hmm. Montreal, like, just can't get anything out of their backup position.
Yeah.
Four wins this past season when Carey Price isn't playing. That's not enough. Like, look what Vegas did. And if you're Montreal, you might challenge for a playoff spot if you have a fresher Carey Price who can do what he did coming in fresh in the playoffs and then pile up some points as well when your backup is playing. That's where I see it. It's a one-year deal. But that, tell you what, with Carey Price and his money and Jake Allen for $4 million, I don't know whether St. Louis retained any salary. I doubt it because of where they are.
Right. No, your point. They certainly want to keep Pietrangelo.
That's a lot of money between Price and Jake Allen.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's another shooter drop in this.
Well, that's the thing because this happens so early. Normally we don't hear about trades before the conference final starts, but here it is, 2020.
Todd Reirden
Yeah.
Formerly of the Washington Capitals, wasn't out very long. He signs on as an assistant with Mike Sullivan and the Pittsburgh Penguins.
And he had been there before, right? He'd
yes.
been there earlier in the 2000s. So maybe Todd is a terrific assistant coach, and I don't know him. But just spoke with him briefly a couple of times. But after Trott's departure, you know, maybe some guys are cut out to be assistants. I can think of a few for sure, and I'm sure you can too, Darren, guys who were fantastic assistant coaches, but for whatever reason just couldn't stick as a head coach.
Dave Lewis, right? Detroit Red Wings, long time yeah. With Scotty.
That's a good example.
You know,
yep.
Todd Reirden, you know what blows me away? This has nothing to do with coaching ability. He's a big guy. Like, really big guy. When you see these shots of the guys behind the bench, and you don't really get an appreciation for it. Sometimes they're smaller, sometimes they're, like Paul Murray, same thing. Big guy.
Yeah, and those coaches are not wearing skates like the players.
Right.
They're not wearing pads like the guys sitting on the bench.
One other one to talk about, Dallas and Colorado. We have about a minute and a half here. This could get really interesting, or you'll witness a really big upset in Colorado being bounced in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest surprises of the postseason to me has been not only Dallas winning, but Dallas scoring goals left and right. Mm-hmm. Holy Toledo, you would have figured, all right, if Dallas is going to make a run, Ben Bishop is going to play like he had, you know, when he, you know, he was Vezina candidate last year. Vasilevsky won it. But remember, Bishop had been the guy in Tampa for a couple of their previous runs. That would be the reason.
Right.
And yet here he is. He's getting pulled. You know, he was injured. So
he's unfit to play.
Unfit
then
to play.
Then he's in.
Yeah. And so that's wild. And even though it was 5-0, because of the crazy scorings in this postseason involving Dallas in the Calgary series and then in this series with Colorado, you're like, well, it's 5-0. But, you know, they could come back, right?
Well,
they scored 7 straight goals in a previous game.
Rick Bowness wanted to put Bishop back in, but he was leery of it because he thought he still might have a chance to win the game.
It's bizarre.
It was strange. So, gut feeling, do you think Dallas ends it tonight?
Oh, I'm rooting for a 7th game.
Because we haven't had a 7th game.
Yeah, I want a game 7. I want a game 7 in every series. I just love watching these games.
Hold on. You want a game 7 in every series but one.
Right. The Golden Knights, I not necessarily. But but no, I would be happy to see a 7th game, and I don't root for one side or the other. You tend to root for individuals if you know somebody. So I have a hard time making predictions. I'm rooting for game 7s in both of the other series.
Well, if we get to do this again, I promise I won't give you the cold shoulder for the first 7 minutes of the show again. I feel bad. I just had a lot in my
bring
chest.
Bring me a Taylor ham sandwich.
Had you just blow away. We'll be back with the Insider Show at 4 o'clock with my Ryan Wallace.